In the immediate aftermath of Donald Trump's election as president, Amy Siskind, a former Wall Street executive and president and co-founder of The New Agenda, began compiling a list of actions taken by the Trump regime that pose a threat to our democratic norms. Under the headline, "Experts in Authoritarianism Advise to Keep a List of Things Subtly Changing Around You So You'll Remember," Siskind's weekly list began as a project she shared with friends containing less than 10 items. But it soon went viral, and now more than 500,000 viewers and upwards of 100 entries each week. Even as the weekly list grew in size, the themes remained consistent. Now, Amy Siskind has put it all together in a book. It is called The List, A Week-by-Week Reckoning of Trump's First Year. The book is published by Bloomsbury, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Amy Siskind to the roundtable this morning. Amy, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
The obvious question is, how did the list come about?
So as Trump was, after the election, preparing to take office, I noticed that unlike traditional Republicans and Democrats, he didn't have a plan or a vision or policies, that he really was riding on the populist sentiment, the wall, and other ways of kind of pitting Americans against each other, which to me had some startling resemblance to past authoritarian regimes like Hitler. And I read up on experts in authoritarianism and what they would recommend that a citizen do in this kind of scenario. And one piece of advice that particularly stood out was to write things down, because a year from now, we wouldn't believe what had happened, because things would be changing slowly and subtly, and we would be the frog in water coming to boil degree by degree and not notice what was happening around us. And that certainly has come to pass. So I'm very grateful in retrospect that I did write things down.
So this started as the weekly list. And when you got started, what was the intention? What did you want it to accomplish?
So the list does not capture any of the traditional Republican versus Democrat type of policy discussions or differences, because that to me is normal. What the list captures are things that are not normal to our democracies or values. For example, when the Republicans and Democrats were discussing repealing Obamacare, that is normal. That's happened in the past. That's a policy discussion. But what's not normal might be people with disabilities protesting outside McConnell's office, being handcuffed, dragged off the wheelchairs, and dragged off and arrested, and that happening elsewhere in the country. What might not be normal is, for example, Trump not filing his tax returns, which in the first year that happened, America was outraged. And this year, you can notice last week, there was barely a whimper. So that's an example of something that we have normalized, that even though Trump is the only modern-day U.S. leader not to file his taxes publicly, that these kind of things are norms that we expected, but they weren't laws. So these are the kind of things over time that I capture in the list that, you know, has grown week by week as he has staffed up his regime and has many people now at hand doing things that are not normal to our democracy. And these are all things that I'm hoping at the end, when he's no longer in power, we can start to undo.
I certainly agree with you that so much has become normalized, and you see that, and you certainly see that in reading the book. And yet, there is still the power of him shocking us, even a year later, isn't there?
Yeah, and that's part of what's worked for him, is that every day there's these sort of shiny coins that keep our media engaged. There'll be, for example, the list now is up to about 160 items, and on a given week, there might be 20 to 30% of the items that are getting a lot of media coverage, and then the rest of the items on the weekly list that are not normal are getting almost no media coverage. And I'll give you an example from last week, and this is a common theme, information disappearing from government websites. Last week, it was information on breast care, breast cancer care. In weeks past, it's been on our climate change or our environment or science disappearing from websites. And that kind of information is getting very little coverage because we're shading in, you know, in the case of the last couple of weeks, looking at Pruitt or what's happened with Ronny Jackson and not paying attention to these smaller but very consequential stories to our democracy and to information being available to the public. Another thing that stood out to me 2 weeks ago that got almost no coverage was when the Department of Homeland Security said they would start to keep a list of journalists and bloggers, which is reminiscent of Hitler and also of something that Nixon did. And again, that was rolled out on a Friday afternoon, got almost no media coverage. And by the time they were back to work on Monday, there were 10 other things that were imploding and they were chasing the next story. So I think it's a media overload, and our media is doing the best they can, but they're missing a lot. And those are the things that I capture in the weekly list.
I mean, because even a couple of weeks ago when we had our military strike in Syria, I mean, that story got lost very, very quickly.
Yeah, and ironically, you know, I think a lot of people that are getting my book are looking, what were we doing 1 year ago today? And it was almost 1 year ago exactly that we bombed Syria the first time.
Right.
And if you look in the book in that week 21, what happened when he bombed Syria, he got positive coverage and he changed the subject. And that was this time at the end of a week when there was a lot of media coverage of what was going on with Michael Cohen's office being raided. And so after a week where he had said that we might pull troops out of Syria, suddenly we're bombing Syria. So it was, again, an effort to throw these shiny coins and change the subject. But you're right. And then by Monday, there were new things happening, and we were on to the next news story.
I find it interesting because when you read the book, you think of these things. But when James Comey was fired, you thought to yourself, oh, well, this is it, right? I mean, this is like, what? This, look at this. And then, as you say, it just becomes sort of, oh, this is yet another person. I mean, ultimately down the road, it just becomes, oh, okay, another person who is leaving the administration.
Yeah, and I said that when Sally Yates was fired, that, yeah, the Monday Night Massacre, that's also in the book. Like, I think we all thought back then, this is the end. And then when Comey was fired, this is the end. And he keeps doing these outrageous things. And I think what we've learned through this process is what we studied in high school history, that there were checks and balances in our democracy, that those were norms, not laws. And right now, it's just not, we're learning our democracy is just not functioning as we thought it would. That the Republican Party, who is the party now in control of our Congress, is not putting checks against Trump in the way that it would seem would be required now. And increasingly, he's, you know, in the case of, for example, the Syrian bombing that you mentioned, where he unilaterally acted against the advice of what is a shrinking pool of national security advisors and no State Department leaders at this point. But he basically unilaterally is deciding things now and leaving a lot of our federal agencies, like our State Department, unstaffed or staffed with people that are not really up to the task of leading the agencies they're designed to run. And he's making the decisions and surrounding himself again by sycophants and people in his family that are running our democracy, which is very alien to what happens in our country. That looks a lot more like an authoritarian type regime.
It doesn't seem like this in real time, but one of the things that the book has instructed me is that indeed some weeks are much, much longer than others.
Yeah, it's gradually the trend is from the time he has taken office and added more people and gotten away with more, the list has become longer. So before he took office, it was basically his actions. But then you have people like DeVos, who is rolling back protections on campus sexual assault, or this week on going after disparate treatment of people of color in the school system. Or you have Nick Mulvaney taking over the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and putting in for a budget of zero and putting in for staff cuts. So basically, there's a lot of hands right now at deconstructing our democracy and our agencies. And the problems become apparent when you have something like, the string of hurricanes we had when our FEMA agency was just really inept at helping out continues to be inept in what's gone on in Puerto Rico, where still that island lost electricity, the total island. So you're going to see that increasingly. It's sort of like a car when you don't get your car serviced. Things eventually break down, and I think we'll see that more and more with our federal agencies and the responsibilities they're not set up to do.
I wanted to ask you a question about the media. So I just opened the book randomly, and I hit page 286 to 287, and you just look at it just from left to right of NPR obtained, CNN reported, Washington Post reported, The Daily Beast reported. The Daily Beast also reported. Politico reported. A lot in this book is the reporting that is being done, which, of course, has to, I think, begs the question that you talked about a few moments ago of what the media's role is in all of this, because it is important for us to know this stuff. They're breaking stories, and yet we are also blaming the media for spending too much Trump time.
Right. And that's a really good question, because I think we are in a unique time in our history, and the book is meant to be a first draft of history, of just sort of flatly, without opinion, telling us what is happening in our country and giving us a trail map back to normalcy. But because our media and all of our country is used to things being in a Republican versus Democrat kind of construct, our media is used to covering a party in power and a U.S. leader in power in a certain way. And it just, in this particular circumstance, is not functioning properly. So I believe the media is doing the best they can. There's just chaos. And in a given week, there's more stories. You know, I hear from reporters that they'll have their 10 a.m. meeting to plan what's going to be on the news at night, and they have to sit down again at 4 o'clock and recast the whole thing.
Sure.
And that's every day.
That's my life now. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. Because we're all living in what Trump, the storm in his mind has become the chaos in our lives. And so I think the media is doing their best. And what my list really does, and I know all the people in the media read it on Sunday when it goes up to see what they missed, I'm picking up, you know, the breadcrumbs for us to follow back, and the stories, a lot of which, especially as relates to marginalized communities, are getting very little coverage on a national basis. A lot of the crisis and a lot of what is engaging Americans right now who have never been politically aligned or politically engaged are the attacks on marginalized communities, women, people with disabilities, rights and protections being taken away, Trump's ICE, which is similar to Hitler's Gestapo. Mm. You know, week after week, this stuff is happening. But, you know, today there are medias on Ronny Jackson and what's happening in our Senate Judiciary Committee. There's always new stories. It's hard to keep up. And that's the service that the list provides.
So what I don't see in the list, which I think is, and see how you, if you agree with me on this, but you see a lot of what different stories that the press has covered, different things that the president has done, different things that the White House has said, and you see that page after page after page in the book. What you don't see is the outrage. You don't see Congressional Representative X said this about this action. The Senate went after and said, oh, we shouldn't be doing this. That's what seems to be missing in this list.
Yeah, I get a lot of people are looking at it from the outside in and wanting more of opinions put into it. And I really have tried to keep it more dry in terms of actual factual content.
But isn't it more sinister than that? Because there isn't really that. Because we're really not hearing that stuff come out?
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, sort of the reflection back. Certainly, if I had quoted Democrats, and once in a while I do quote opinions like Fareed Zakaria talking about our standing in the world because he is an expert in that area, or quoting other experts like Walter Schaub on lack of ethic reforms and keeping up with required paperwork. But it's really meant to be non-judgmental, because I'm hoping, as a book that is meant to be the first draft of history, that people on both sides of the aisle are going to read this. I know a lot of people have sent it to family members who are supporters of Trump to say, this is actually happening to our country that we love, and we have to be awakened to what's happened. So I think a lot of it, when you read it, speaks for itself. I mean, there's one week in particular that I read on a lot of my book events, which is week 32, which is a week that was just chock full of themes where our potential election in 2016 was not done fairly. For example, data on 200 million Americans was left open online where it could be hacked by a Republican consulting firm, the head of which now works for Trump. That same week, there was evidence that the day of voting in North Carolina, that voter rolls didn't properly function in blue districts, but in red districts next door, they were just fine. And there was item and item after each other in that week. And it just, you know, these are kind of themes I want people to be able to draw from. So when you see Cambridge Analytica come up, you kind of look in the index and say, wow, look at all these other ways that our election could have been hampered. Or when you see Sinclair Broadcasting, look at all the different ways our media landscape is changing and being silenced. And that's what I'm hoping that people can draw together by looking at the facts of what happened.
The subtitle of the book is A Week-by-Week Reckoning of Trump's First Year. So the question, of course, is when do we come to the ultimate reckoning?
So I'm going to keep up with the list until he's out of office. And I believe he will not make it to the end of his first term. I see three sort of colliding factors that could be the end of his time serving in office. The first is the Me Too movement, and this has been playing out actually rather quickly with the raids on Cohen's office and hotel, and Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal are probably the tip of a very large iceberg of people that have been harassed and threatened and bought off. So watch that theme, and that's playing out in real time this morning, especially with Trump's help and saying, yes, Cohen did represent me with Stormy Daniels. The second is the Mueller probe, and I, in particular, am focused on Deutsche Bank and some of the other money trail kind of items that are mentioned in the book. And the third is Cambridge Analytica and whether we had a fair election and ties that the Trump campaign may have had to foreign money and foreign influence in our election, which is also illegal. And the thing that we've noticed about Trump, in addition to him seizing power, is he believes he's the best at everything he does. And so he doesn't really have a traditional set of lawyers to protect him from these things. And he'll do, as I mentioned this morning, go on and say things that will hurt his case in terms of the potential court implications. So I don't have a crystal ball as to which of these things will be the thing to take him down, but there's more and more information coming out each week, and he's not self-reflective enough to, or able, I think, at this point, to get the kind of legal help he needs.
The words that are on the cover of the book, after the title and subtitle, experts in authoritarianism advise to keep a list of things subtly changing around you so you'll remember. And that's exactly what you've done here. I just want to focus on two words. One is subtly. I mean, some of this is subtle, but some of it also is just smack you upside the head, too.
Yeah. And that's what I've really come to appreciate reading it again, is some of the stuff, like we mentioned, the tax returns, is not subtle. But because there's so many things coming at us every day, we have to figure out how to focus our outrage. And I think the good news is two things could have happened after he took office. We could have been like the people in Naomi Shulman's poem who watched the Germans parading the Jews down the street. We could have been the nice people and done nothing. But instead, our country has done the opposite. You know, we've had two huge social movements come up in the era of Trump, the Me Too movement, and then what's happening with our teens on gun violence. One in five people in America have marched since Trump took office. People are engaged in voting, as you can see, in the changing, special election kind of results. So even though things are subtle and even though many Americans are outraged, I think it's leading to changes in our country and enough of what I call the resistance and what's known as the resistance, that there's enough, pushback to him not being able to get away with this kind of stuff. you know, and the alarming part as all this is happening is how the Republicans have reacted in office and in the early weeks of the book. And these are things that kind of happen and we forget about them when you talk about subtly. Jason Chaffetz resigned. He was a very powerful Republican in the House. And not only did he decide he wasn't going to run again, he left town. Shortly thereafter, Daryl Issa, Trey Gowdy, and most recently Paul Ryan have all said they're not running for re-election. So these are, again, very powerful Republicans that worked really hard to get these plum positions and are leaving town. So there are these, you know, strange connections and strange occurrences happening that you trace through in the book, subtly happening. You probably forgot about Jason Chaffetz and who he even is at this point.
Right.
But, you know, you scratch your head and say, why are all these guys, 40-plus, not running for re-election, and why are they getting out of Washington as quick as they can? So, you know, these are storylines that are still playing out and remain to be told.
And let us end here, and I just want to focus on another word of what I just read, and that the end of that, of so you'll remember. And I know this may sound flip, and I don't mean it to be, but my God, you know, is it possible for us to forget, I guess, in the sense of, are we going to ever reach a point where we get back to whatever normal was, that we can move on and this does become a distant memory?
I think we're going to have, when this is all over, a reaction to it and put in place laws that prevent certain things that up till now only norms have been protecting us against. And I think a lot of the granular stuff that tells stories, for example, ICE and what they've been doing week by week, which a lot of it is local stories. So the national media is not covering Motel 6, calling ICE to give them all the Hispanic names at their hotel in Arizona, or the roundups at 7-Elevens, and these kind of themes. I think we need to, like, understand what happened week by week to be able to correct it. And so much of what happened in those early weeks, even when I read it, I'm like, I forgot that Trump was the executive producer of The Celebrity Apprentice, and that he was attacking Arnold Schwarzenegger for the ratings. You know, so these are things that back then were like, wow. But it's important because maybe in the future we'll have legislation that says once you are the leader of the United States, you cannot have these other obligations. You cannot run a company that you can benefit from in terms of your foreign policy, for example. So I think we'll hopefully have a lot of safeguards in place because of the stuff described in this book.
Well, the name of the book is The List, a week-by-week reckoning of Trump's first year, and it's published by Bloomsbury. Amy Siskin, I thank you very much for spending time with us. What a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Again, The List, a week-by-week reckoning of Trump's first year by Amy Siskind. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.